Welcome back. Everybody had a good weekend. Enjoyed Friday off from lecture. I suspect probably not, since there was still an exam going on at that time. But any comments or questions related to the exam, those of you here or online?
Can also when will they get graded approximately?
I'll try to get them done this week. Be quicker on those. I fell behind for a while there on homeworks. Homeworks, you have the solutions and tend to not grade as harshly, but I know with exams, there's a bit more of a lingering desire to know how that went, and so we'll try to get those back pretty quickly. If nothing else, then we'll go ahead and continue on. Follow that on Friday. You have a design comparison due for the Tiny Box Challenge. Make sure you're working on that. And other than that, no homework this week. We agreed upon. So last time we were talking about this concept of a resonant switch network, and really just trying to generalize some aspects of state plane analysis to multiple different types of resonant circuits that we might employ in traditional PWM converters. Okay, so separate from anything we've done with AC link converters or other exotic topologies, if we just want to be looking at standard buck boost, Chuuk, Sepik, these flyback, these types of topologies, can we generalize results in any way where we can speed up that process? And we'll kind of make good on that today, hopefully. We started by just looking at this ZVS quasi-resonant buck implementation. So it's a parent topology of a buck here, and then we added two resonant elements, LR and CR, and looking at the high frequency switch network, we can identify that as a ZVS quasi-resonant switch network. The goal of that was to achieve ZVS. We looked at the half wave implementation. Did some state plane analysis of it, up with conditions for ZVS and full analysis of the behavior, along with the averaging step, gave us eventually the conversion ratio of the converter. And plugging in, found that that conversion ratio can be expressed as really a function of F and JL in the normalized parameter space. And I'm going to use this to be able to find some general characteristics of this switch network and then see how they apply for zero current switching, quasi-resonant, and quasi-square wave, all four quadrants that we looked at previously. Last thing we did was we talked a little bit about the voltage stress in this implementation, something specific to the ZVS quasi-resonant converter, because we get this larger hump there in the CR capacitor voltage during this resonance, we end up with higher voltage stress on the MOSFET. And that voltage stress gets even larger the more of the load range we want to achieve ZVS. Okay, so if we just want ZVS at a single power, voltage stress is going to be about twice the input voltage or twice what it would be in a PWM buck in the ideal case. If we want to get zero voltage switching over the majority of the load range, then it's going to be a much higher multiple of that input voltage. So here, if we want 80% of the load range, we get six times the input voltage for our peak voltage stress. So here I'm just going to show a simulation of this thing to show some of the waveforms and make a point about some other parasitics that aren't included. So this simulation is, let's see, 1 megahertz switching, the 48 to 16 volt conversion. And I just didn't bother modeling the output filter. Instead, I just put a current source here, the behavior of ideal infinite inductor keeping a constant current. So as far as the waveforms in the switching network should be the same as a very large filter inductor at the output. So this voltage will still be pulsing up and down as the diode voltage, but the average of this VD is equal to 16 volts. If I tack a low pass filter onto it, it'll have the same waveforms here. In this design, JL is my output current, 5 amps, be my inductor current, divided by I base, which is VG, 48 volts, over R naught, be the square root of my 1 microhenry inductor over my 10 nanofarad capacitor. And that is very nearly 1 amp. Well, 1 unitless, 1 amp per amp, which is our ZVS condition. JL needs to be greater than or equal to 1 to obtain ZVS. So this design is very near to the ZVS boundary. And since it's just a simulation independent of any given application, what that means depends. 5 amps may be 10% of our peak load and we're simulating at the ZVS boundary, or if 5 amps is our designed load current, it means we've designed this so that it only achieves ZVS at that load current. But if we drop this down from 5 amps to 4 amps, expect to lose ZVS in the circuit now for this design. So here's the waveforms of it. Resonant inductor current at the top, capacitor voltage, and then the diode voltage and diode current. And they look more or less as predicted. So inductor current up here at IL is equal to 5 amps, resonates down and back up. Capacitor voltage goes to about twice the input voltage, a little greater than 48 times 2. Looks like it might almost hit 100 volts, but pretty darn close. And things generally work as expected. One thing I do want to call out on this note is this right here. This transition as the diode shuts off. So as the inductor current reaches IL, we no longer have any current going through the diode. This causes the diode to shut off. And to the extent that this diode is an ideal, we have a DVDT on the diode, which is very large, and it snaps off and goes to blocking. That's again because, unlike in the ZVS quasi-square wave case, this one where we had a big triangular current, this resonant switch topology does not incorporate this capacitor here. So in this simulation, I set that capacitor to 0 and everything's fine. But very clearly, if this diode is a real diode, it will have some capacitance. And if I have any capacitance there, I'm not going to get this super sharp DVDT. It's going to take some time. I'm going to have to charge that in some manner. Okay. So we can think about what's going to happen if we add this capacitance and make some arguments. The reason we haven't natively included it is because it'll kind of make things difficult, right? If I include this capacitance as well as CR, instead of having a single resonant circuit, I have the potential for a multi-resonant circuit. Since the CD is not directly in parallel with CR like it was when this was our resonant inductor, I'll end up with some cases where I have both CR, CD, and LR in series, but decoupled by a constant current IL coming out of here, and I might have two different resonant frequencies going on at the same time. Then everything with state plane analysis, like I mentioned, kind of falls apart. I end up with potentially ellipsoids or something that looks like a spirograph where I have one resonance spinning around another resonance circle on top of a circle, and results from state plane are less useful. Okay. So thinking about, okay, what would happen if I included this capacitance here in the waveforms of the converter? So copy the same ideal waveforms. So we go through the period, beginning, the FET turns off. Here, diode on. Here, diode off. here FET on. Bought my same waveforms, and then I've also shown IQ, what is the actual current going through this transistor. Same way. Q. So kind of what happens is we go through the period for these first few intervals. The presence of this capacitance isn't such a big deal. Obviously here, when the diode is on, we're not going to care about that capacitance because the diode's shorting it out by being in a forward bias state. In this first interval, as the FET turns off, we're going to now have some limited slew rate of VD. But we actually end up with that anyway, even when there was no capacitance on the diode, because this voltage is moving very slowly by IL flowing through CR, moving at a slow rate. As we put CD in there, may slow that down a little bit, but still going to be at this kind of constrained. So it's IL over CR in our original analysis. As we put in the diode capacitance, might get slowed a little bit, but it's still kind of a constant current charging this capacitance. That'll all be fine. The problems are going to come right here. When transistor comes back on, ramps up the current, and at this point, ILR hits IL, and takes over all the current. There's no longer any current forward biasing the diode. The diode shuts off. And now this CD capacitance is in the circuit. But that happens here. Starts with 0 volts across it. And with the capacitance there, what we end up with now is a new resonant circuit where we have VG, the FET is on, LR, CD. And then the inductor current going out to the output. And we start with an initial condition where there's IL going through the inductor and 0 volts on CD, but our final DC solution needs to keep IL in the inductor, but get the voltage on CD up to VG. We'll still call it V switch. So what's going to happen is we're going to end up with an additional resonance that happens in this interval. Instead of things just snapping off nicely, we're going to have some resonance between LR and CD. We know that we start here. This is our DC solution. Initially, the inductor has IL current in it, and the capacitor voltage is 0, so we expect to see something that rings up to about twice VG. As we resonate around this circle. Okay. We're gonna end up with some big ringing here. That's maybe an issue, maybe not. It still averages to the same thing on its own. We can still end up kind of with the same type of waveforms through it. The problem is that this ringing is gonna come around, and now at the start of this next interval, unless things are timed out perfectly, our voltage may not be in the right place. So that ringing is happening with the inductor current. We can come in and end up with some different initial condition going back into our subinterval one. If we have a different initial condition, then our state plane will play out differently and all our timings change. And unless we're real lucky, we're going to end up losing ZVS and having big issues. Right? So the presence of this capacitance is going to kind of mess with everything we've done in these waveforms and our ideal assumptions. So here's some simulation results just showing how that plays out. Let's see what these values were. Got this red waveform is a 1 nanofarad CD. Blue was 100 picofarads. And this orangey yellow is 10 nanofarads. These are all for CR was 10 nanofarads. Okay. And you can see adding this capacitance into the circuit can, in some cases, completely destroy everything, in some cases, just slightly modify it. So looking at this 10 nanofarads case, obviously we're not getting zero voltage switching anymore. We turn on the FET here at some very high peak voltage. The waveform's completely different. End up with a bunch of ringing everywhere. This blue case, the smallest capacitance, in some sense looks really bad when we look at the diode voltage ringing very quickly. But because the capacitance is small, the energy in that ringing is small, so we just end up with some minor ripple on IL, and we end up pretty close to ZVS when we turn on the FET. Not too far off. This middle case, CD is equal to 1 nanofarads. They are some small amount of non-ZVS. We turn on the FET. This voltage here will end up being hard switched and we'll have some COSS type losses. A little bit more ringing on the inductor current, but still fairly close to our ideal waveforms, except for this VD voltage. Okay, VD voltage looks terrible, but we can ask again how much we really care. Having this high frequency ringing, maybe an EMI issue may cause some additional losses, but its presence alone doesn't harm the converter. It's ringing across the VD, it can still operate there, still centered around the average that we predicted, 48 volts, our original analysis. So to the extent that we either switch after a number of complete periods or the frequency is fast enough that a partial period doesn't matter, we'll still get the same average voltage applied to our downstream LC filter and still get the same output voltage. Maybe we're okay with this, but obviously it looks pretty bad and it looks like it may be an EMI issue, something we want to mitigate in the converter. So we can try to snub that or get rid of it, or just try to select the smallest capacitance diode and hope that we're okay with it. Those are kind of the options at our disposal, but it leads to this point of, man, it'd be really nice if we could figure out something that incorporated this capacitance as well. Right. We can, looking at these waveforms, almost see a viable pathway in that even with a pretty large CD in this red case, the 1 nanofarad, if we kind of come around, resonate, and turn on right at this point here, right at a zero crossing, okay, we're getting some number of integer number of resonant periods during this time where the diode is shut off. And maybe if we time that out correctly, we can get just like a single resonant period out of it. Have just single resonant period on VCR, single resonant period on VCD, and kind of have two different nice resonant intervals, right? Possible the issue is that we're going to have to analyze this circuit in these cases where state plane analysis doesn't directly apply because there are multiple different resonances going on. So just kind of summarizing here what our wish list might be if we were greedy power electronics designers is to be able to do a high frequency switch network that looks like this. Where we have both capacitances of the MOSFET and diode incorporated into the behavior and have this quasi-resonant type network by having a series inductor. Okay. So we can get both of these capacitances incorporated natively in a quasi-square wave. QD, because we put the inductor in shunt in that type of network. So CDS and CD are directly in parallel. Back to our just large ripple buck converter. We let the ripple be large enough to get zero voltage switching of both devices. we go higher and higher frequency, we might want to be able to do that in a quasi-resonant network. We end up with higher voltage stresses, as we've talked about. The nice thing about quasi-resonant networks is that we can eliminate some of those residual turnoff losses that we've talked about as being our main remaining switching loss. Because of this quasi-resonant waveform, we expect very slow increase in BDS as we shut off the FET, rather than this really fast jump that we see in quasi-square wave converters, where we turn off at peak current. All those turnoff losses, residual overlap losses that turn off, depend on how fast BDS rises versus how fast my gate driver is. So I can mitigate those if I have a slow rise in BDS, and we can do that in these quasi-resonant networks. So getting up to very high switching frequency with still reasonable efficiency, we might want something like this, should kind of outperform quasi-square wave in terms of residual turnoff losses. This is what we call the ZVS multi-resonant instead of a ZVS quasi-resonant switch network. And it is a bit more of a pain to analyze, but can be done. Got a reference down here on analysis of the ZVS multi-resonant buck converter. The analysis of this for most subintervals proceeds the same. If we think about which FETs, which of the FET and diode are conducting, and what is the equivalent circuit, so there are possible cases. If we have Q on, we end up with an equivalent circuit that shorts out this, I'm now calling it CQ and CD. Our circuit that we'd analyze shorts out CD, got LR, or excuse me, shorts out CQ. CD is still here, LR, and our output current. Let's say, what is our R0? So state plane analysis, no problem with this. We'd have an R0 of root LR over CD. And we've got one inductor, one capacitor, can analyze it. Just the diode on, be the opposite case. Current is shorted out through the diode, got LR and CQ. And individually in this interval, we can analyze things, no problem. It's still a single resonance. But it's a single resonance with a different R0. Now we're normalizing by CQ instead of CD, and unless we just so happen to select a FET and diode that have the same capacitance, means our normalizations are different and we're on different state planes. Okay. Because we have some inductance in between Q and D, we've got the possibility to have both on at the same time, as we saw in the quasi-resonant network. So if we turn both of them on at the same time, we end up with a simple, easy to analyze linear circuit. LR here, IL is shorted out by the diode. We don't have to worry about any characteristic impedance because it's a linear subinterval. Quotes around that. These are all linear circuits. I mean, is that it'll be straight line ripple. And then the last case is the biggest problematic one, which is where we have both devices off, nothing conducting. And now we end up with this circuit that makes our state plane analysis, in this case, a little more complicated, but doesn't truly break it. So let me see, got the rest of this. So now we've got two different capacitances and an inductance, and those capacitances aren't purely in series, purely in parallel, in a way that allows us to reduce this down to just a single CD and CQ trivially. Turns out we actually can do that by doing some equivalent circuit. I kind of take these three elements in series, CD having this additional current parallel, shift them around, move the inductor up here, elements in series, I can do that and still get the main behaviors. Then I can do like a Thevenin equivalent of this IL in parallel with CD, get a voltage source, then CD and CQ will be directly in series. Now I can actually put them in series as some equivalent capacitor. Say I can analyze this with some equivalent capacitor of CD CQ over CD plus CQ, two of them in series, some equivalent current source, IL times CQ over CD plus CQ, and my R naught is root LR over CEQ. Okay. That'll get it down to a single L and C. I can analyze it and put it on now a third state plane, see the behavior during the subinterval to get back to the actual waveforms independently of CQ and CD. I'm going to have to step back through that, pull out the ramping component of the voltage on CD due to this IL current, separate that from the resonance. It's a bit of a pain to do. Mentioning it here, I'm not going to expect you to analyze any multi-resonant topologies, but more so you're aware this can be done, and we can go beyond just a single L and C using state plane analysis still. Here's reference. This is from the PhD thesis of one of the authors of Fundamentals of Power Electronics, Dragan Maksimovich, went through and did the analysis of this ZVS multi-resonant buck converter, had to go across some 9 different possible operating modes depending on the switching pattern and what you're modulating and what the load current is compared to the passive values, but found these certain operating modes where everything obtains ZVS and has nice switching waveforms, and showed, okay, it's a lot more complicated in getting, the perfect timing of each of these individual switching subintervals. But if you can do it, this thing can have some really favorable operating characteristics. Okay, so this first plot up here is M, the conversion ratio, versus delta. This is just J, as we've talked about it. There's different parameters used there, or different variables, names used. And it's kind of dotted line. And this one here are the ZVS bounds. So everything in between these two red lines obtains ZVS. And so it's got some really nice characteristics. And one, everything between here and here has ZVS for all loads. Meaning I'm within the ZVS bounds and it goes all the way down to J is equal to 0. So I can go from 0 output power up to full output power, maintaining ZVS everywhere. That's something none of our more traditional resonant switch topologies can do. It also has reduced stresses compared to a ZVS quasi-resonant buck. And that's shown down here at the bottom. This is the Q peak over VG normalized, and then P out over PO max, whatever the max design power is. Goes from 0 to 1 is no load to full load. And then looking at the voltage stresses for the ZVS quasi-resonant buck, it depends on the design. So this RL max over RL min is equal to 10 is saying I want ZVS for 90% of the load range. From full power down to 10% output power, 5 is 80% to 50% load range. And then this solid line here is the multi-resonant buck with, says R divided by R max is infinity, meaning it gets ZVS everywhere, across the entire load range, 100% of it. You can see the only way to really get below these voltage stresses is to give up half of your load range on the ZVS quasi-resonant converter to hard switching. So it has a peak voltage stress in certain operating mode of maybe about 3 times the input voltage, but can be bounded there across all loads. Okay. Then I won't expect you to actually run the analysis that I'm showing here. Really want you to be aware of this operating mode and this sort of design. Questions on any of that? Anybody online? Not, then we'll move into final topics surrounding this idea of these resonant switch networks, which is kind of how do they fit into the parent PWM topologies. We've looked extensively at the buck converter. We've gone through earlier in class ZVS quasi square wave buck, and now the ZVS quasi resonant buck. Mentioned this multi-resonant thing. I haven't covered it in any detail. But what about other topologies? If I want to put one in a boost, Jukes Epic, and then how do the results from what we've done so far generalize to these other topologies? So this idea that we mentioned before is looking at what we call the switch cell, okay, the extracting from the converter all the stuff that has some high frequency behavior, leaving behind the DC sources and any of the filter elements, and then analyzing that independently. Okay. And here, just want to remind how we would have done that back in 481 type analysis if we had, a PWM converter with no resonant elements. Okay. We pull this switch cell out, and then we can look at the average behavior of the switch cell itself. For this buck type switch cell, we turn this fed on for DTS, the diode conducts for D prime TS for in CCM. We can say, okay, the average behavior of this switch cell is average of V2 is equal to our duty cycle, which may be time varying, times average V1, just for the duty cycle percent of the period the Fed is on and V2 is equal to V1, the rest of the time it's equal to zero. And then by power balance, the dual that's gonna hold. So average I1 is equal to D of T times average I2. Okay. Makes it so that V1 times I1 is equal to V2 times I2. We could also just say we have some current I2 during D percent of the period that's equal to I1. When the MOSFET is on, it just passes straight through. Okay. So that averaging just of the switch cell gets us to some equivalent average behavior of the switch cell. And it looks like, okay, from the input voltage to the output voltage, we scale everything by a factor of D, inverse for the currents. Means the behavior of this is just that of our DC transformer. Here's our switch cell and this buck converter connected to the output. Then what's actually inside this switch cell, if we put in our averaging, say it's modeled by just a transformer, the turns ratio of 1 to D of T. And normally put this bar here to indicate it's a DC transformer. It's a mathematical concept, can't actually exist. It passes DC through it, not a real transformer. It behaves through the same equations. Okay? And this is our averaged nonlinear model of the PWM buck converter. Okay? It's nonlinear because we have a time-varying turns ratio here on this transformer. We change the duty cycle, it's changing the turns ratio in time. It's not something we can actually do, and it's going to result in a voltage here, which is a product of some signal VG of T and DFT, we're multiplying two signals together. It's a nonlinear circuit, but it's average, so we've gotten rid of all the high frequency stuff. Typically, you go through 481 and you do, as I mentioned before, state averaging. You look at volt second balance and cap charge balance. You can also do state space averaging or switch averaging, which is what we've done here, just averaging the terminal waveforms of the switch cell. All of them get you to the same point. Here, we could either solve for the large signal steady state behaviors from this average circuit, or we could start taking partial derivatives of the equations of the circuit to get a small signal model. So we've done the averaging step, then we could linearize to get to a linear small signal model. Okay. The reason I dwell on this is that, okay, we're going to be able to do the same thing with any of these resonant switch networks. The only difference is instead of just a simple D of T, we're going to replace it with whatever the conversion ratio of that switch cell is and plug it in the same manner. And what it means is that once we've now analyzed the ZVS quasi-resonant switch cell, I don't have to do any additional analysis. If I tell you, let's do instead of a ZVS quasi-resonant buck, let's do a ZVS quasi-resonant buck boost. What I have to do is take the traditional result from the PWM converter, replace D with the conversion ratio of the new switch cell, and now you have the model of a ZVS quasi-resonant buck boost or any other topology. So this switching cell conversion ratio, the traditional PWM case, it's just D for a buck type switch cell. For anything else, it'll be this function of F and JL that we derived. Okay, so we already looked at this ZVS quasi-resonant buck. We found that M was some function. Hop back to it real quick. Found that the conversion ratio of this converter was this thing, 1 minus F over 2 pi times everything in brackets. So we reduced it down to a form where it was really just a function of F and JL. This way. Okay. So the way we got this, was we applied kind of cap charge balance at the output that said IL is equal to I out. And then we applied volt second balance on the inductor that said that average V switch is equal to V out. We did our state plane analysis over here on the left and then applied our averaging equations to L and C. And so we derive this by saying V is equal to the average value of V switch. So if we back that out, because those two are equal, it does mean that this M is also average V switch over average VG, which is our switch cell conversion ratio. So it's taking the switch cell here, giving us a relationship between the average VG and the average V switch, which are the input and output of it, independent of all of this low frequency stuff. Okay, those are the same waveforms here, V1 and V2. So we've really already derived the switch cell conversion ratio. What is V2 over V1? For the PWM case, it was D. For the ZVS quasi-resonant case, it's this M that we've already derived. And say, let's relabel here. Let's call this voltage V1, this voltage V2 to match with this slide. Say V2 is equal to average value M times average value of V1. And then again, by power balance, I1. Equal to M times average I2. With our ideal assumptions, there are no lossy elements in here. Okay. power balance will always hold. This is unique to the buck converter. Buck converter is the only one where the conversion ratio through the switches is equal to the overall converter conversion ratio. The buck converter is just the switch network with an LC filter tacked on, which you already knew because the conversion ratio of the buck is D, but for everything else, it's some function of D. Boost, it's 1 over 1 minus D. Buck boost, D over D prime, these other things. Okay. So for a buck type converter, we can just take what we already had, M, use that to replace D, and we get the behavior now of the ZVS quasi-resonant buck converter. Okay. Already done that, but it shows how it plugs in. For anything else, we're going to be able to do the same, but we need to define something to differentiate between the switch cell conversion ratio and the overall conversion ratio of the converter. So we're going to use the parameter mu. And I have to make sure I emphasize that it's different from M. We're going to have this mu parameter is the switch cell conversion ratio. Average V2 is equal to mu times average V1. Regardless of whether it's a buck converter or a boost converter or anything else, we can define this. Power balance will always hold. So the buck is a special case. Where mu is equal to M, switch cell conversion ratio is equal to the overall conversion ratio for anything else. Mu is not equal to M, switch cell conversion ratio is not equal to the overall conversion ratio, but we don't have to do much additional work to find the overall conversion ratio. So we can take the PWM results. And replace D of T with mu of T. Get the new conversion ratio. For example, for a boost, M in the PWM case is equal to 1 over 1 minus D. For the resonant case, we'll have M is equal to 1 over 1 minus mu. The switch cell conversion ratio, and fortunately, we've already derived the switch cell conversion ratio for the ZVS quasi-resonant buck. And we went back to the first couple weeks of the course for the ZVS quasi-square wave. And to summarize, and this is pulling from the Fundamentals of Power Electronics book, here's what they are for all four of these different resonant switch networks that have a single resonant frequency. Okay. So starting with PWM, our conversion ratio mu is D. We don't have any limitations on the range of the current conversion ratio. Mu can go from 0 to 1, and we can use traditional switches in it. For the ZVS quasi-resonant converter half wave, what we looked at in the last few slides, conversion ratio, and I'm using the book's notation again here, is 1 minus F times this function p 1 half of 1 over jl, where p 1 half is this function. Plug in 1 over jl for x. Current range, we needed jl greater than 1 in order to achieve ZVS. Below that, this model isn't valid anymore. Functionally, this range is to make sure we're achieving ZVS. You can see here in this 1 minus 1 over x squared, where x becomes 1 over jl. If jl is not greater than 1, it's going to emit imaginary numbers and the math will fall apart because it's all derived assuming that resonance takes us all the way to 0 on the MC axis. The results don't apply if we can't reach it. And the conversion ratio of the switch cell can be between 0 and 1 for all of these. Okay. If we want to do the full wave implementation, I mentioned this briefly, we need bidirectional voltage blocking on Q. And it has to look like a back-to-back switch or a diode in series with a switch so we can block voltage in both directions. For the ZCS converters, and these are analyzed in detail throughout chapter 21 of the second edition of the power electronics book, so we haven't gone into detail on them. They need limited JL current, so it has to be less than 1 in order to maintain ZCS. If we want to do the half wave implementation, we need unidirectional current switch, meaning something like this. That in series with a diode that'll shut off as current hits 0. They oscillate between the four of these using P1 or P1 half. Only difference really is this 2 pi versus pi. Is it half a resonant period or a full resonant period? And then 1 over JL or JL being plugged in for X, whether it's a ZVS or a ZCS network. So we'll do a few examples. We only get through identification in this class. First part of this is figuring out from a topology what sort of resonant network you have. And we've talked about how to do this, but I haven't done any examples. So here I've got some flyback converter and some forward converter. And they're in some way designed to be resonant and soft switching. I got to figure out what type of converter it is, what type of switch cell I'm using. So call this LR. The magnetizing inductance of this flyback is small such that it is resonant. And I've got capacitance like the winding capacitance, diode capacitance, and FET capacitance down here. If I want to figure out what type of switch cell this is, I do is I look at the high frequency switching network. Again, I'm going to short out VG, because it should be DC, so 0 volts at high frequency, short out the output capacitor, and then reduce this down and see what my high frequency switch cell looks like. Shorting out this output capacitor gets rid of this R. What I end up with is this diode and CS in parallel with CWS. So I can kind of combine those two caps together. And then at high frequency AC, I'm going to reflect this back through the transformer. So now I've got an equivalent circuit that looks like this LR, some equivalent capacitance of CWS and CS, and then my diode reflected back through. And then below that, I've got my FET. And was labeled as CP here. And I can simplify this a little bit further. I'm just going to kind of unfold it in half here. So I've got effectively, if I flip around everything in parallel, U, L, R, let's see, EQ2, which is CWS and CS reflected through the transformer in parallel with CP. D, Eventually, my high frequency switch network has everything in parallel. This is the ZVS quasi square wave network. Okay. So this thing will behave according to ZVS quasi square wave equations, look a lot like a normal flyback converter, but have triangular current ripple in LR that goes up large enough, and if we design it right, to get ZVS of our main FET. Okay. The forward converter, if we do the same thing, say in this design, these two things are resonant. And the capacitance I'm trying to incorporate is the CR. So L is a filter element that goes to an open, C goes to a short, so it doesn't really matter. And my input voltage goes to a short for the AC network. And I'll again reflect everything through the transformer. I end up with a circuit that looks like LP, looking through, say, LS over N squared, diode, diode cap, this one takes an additional second looking at because I've got two diodes. Which one's the actual diode in our switch network? The answer is that these two, being purely in series, are one effective switch. That is a voltage bidirectional. Switch, and that is our Q in this high frequency network. Since they're in this equivalent high frequency circuit directly in series, we can kind of combine them. This other diode has this capacitor in parallel, so it's going to have different behavior. And then we reduce this down. So we've got this effective Q, which is a combination of Q and what was DS. QS to note that it's the combination of both of them. And from that one to get over to this diode, I've got this inductance in series. DP with the capacitor in parallel. So this topology with the capacitor in parallel with DP is a ZCS quasi-resonant switch network. The capacitor was over in parallel with QS. It would have been our ZVS quasi-resonant that we just looked at. The capacitor is on the other side. It's ZCS quasi-resonant. And based on having this bidirectional switch, it must be the half-wave implementation. If we replace DS with a FET, we can potentially make it into, we can potentially make it the full wave implementation by allowing current in both directions. Okay. So you can identify now from some resonant network on a parent PWM topology which of these switch cells are being employed based on where the resonant elements that are incorporated exist in the circuit, simplifying down. Then again, next class, we'll go the other direction. Go the other direction and show how we can actually analyze this thing using these results. Okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll end there. Pick up on Wednesday.